A few weeks ago, I invited listeners to the show to email me if they wanted to tell their career story on the air. Well, one of the people who emailed me is a guy named Brian Jones, and his goal was never to run his own business. He always wanted an 8-to-5 job with benefits and retire as early as he could. Well, that's not quite how it worked out. And no, it's not the kind of story that makes it easy to the radio, rags to riches. It's not that. Brian Jones, welcome to Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you.
So start from the beginning. What were you like in school?
What was I like in school? I didn't do very well in school, actually. I responded to the call for somebody to come on because you had mentioned, you know, kind of crawling up in your car to a vodka bottle. And so that kind of piqued my curiosity, and then that's why I wrote you.
Because you had a period in your life where you were curling up with something rather than working or something. Tell us about that.
Well, I grew up in foster care, I had a time, especially, you know, right when in my early youth, where I didn't have any family and I found myself, you know, homeless on the streets, et cetera, et cetera. So that kind of situation was what I kind of responded to. Later on, I got into working and so on.
What got you from when you were at the bottom? When I picked you homeless, I picked you sleeping in a sleeping bag in a doorway. Were you like that, or, you know, carrying around plastic garbage bags with your stuff or a shopping cart?
There was a place that I lived at, an outdoor kind of shelter near the Army freeway. I did volunteer work at homeless shelters and things like that.
And how'd you go from there to what, you know, we all of us, as we drive by or walk by a homeless person, we say, geez, if I give him a buck, it's not really going to change anything. Was there a moment or anything that made you get out of that? What got you out of there?
You know, basically just going back to work. I don't know if you're too familiar with it. You know, you hit 18. In my case, it was a little earlier. I was in 13 foster homes, you know, growing up. And I was fed up. I had enough. And I managed to get a job for working for a microfilm company when I was 17. I worked there for 10 months, got laid off about two months before aging out. And it was too late to go back into foster care. And I just kind of, you know, fell by the wayside. I didn't have any family, found myself homeless on the streets. Things got worse and worse, and I gradually, you know, got into a shelter, found work, menial jobs. And
how'd you do that? A lot of people these days are desperate even for menial jobs. You were homeless. It's kind of, you can't say you had a great resume. You didn't have an address. So how did you go from being homeless to getting even a menial job?
I took a job working at a hot dog stand down at Fisherman's Wharf.
How'd you get that?
I went into EDD, and
that's the unemployment department.
Yeah, yeah. Back then, you could actually, you know, meet with a counselor, mm-hmm. and they found me the job. And it was, you know, I worked from 4 to 12 at Fisherman's Wharf. I had, you know, containers of soft drinks thrown at me, and people would tell me, why don't you get a real job, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. I would have to walk home late at night. Sometimes I lived in the Mission. I would walk sometimes all the way from Fisherman's Wharf to the Mission before a bus would come. You know, things like that.
Did you really hate the job altogether? My favorite job was the New York City cab driver. It was the lowest level job I had. I loved it. Did you always hate the job at the hot dog stand, or was there a part of it you liked?
I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful that I had that, you know, that I mean, that's kind of how things started for me. I didn't really like the job, but it was a job.
And what did you do from there at that point? How'd you leave the hot dog stand? What happened next?
I got into some construction work, and I actually got fired from the hot dog stand. I was able to get some construction work. This is 20 years ago.
Sure.
And it was a little easier to find work, I think, back
right,
then.
Right, absolutely.
I got into, hardware store, and eventually I learned the career that I'm doing now, which is I'm a locksmith.
So how did most people are, so you were working in the hardware store. Was that what was you originally intending? You had some measure of security. You had a job. You had a steady paycheck. And then you acquired these kind of locksmithy skills while you were there. There isn't a huge Grand Canyon-sized jump from working in the hardware store to becoming self-employed. How did that, what happened that made that transition happen?
Well, I mean, when I started, I wanted to go into construction, but I didn't have any, when I was younger, but I didn't really have any direction, any guidance. No, there was nobody out there to really, point me towards, like, say, the Carpenters Union or something like that. I didn't know about that stuff. And so I just kind of haphazardly, found people that I could do work for. And because of that construction experience, I had a little bit of a resume, so that when I went to the hardware store, I tried to get a job, and I sent out a resume to a bunch of hardware stores just thinking, it's kind of construction related. And I got hired at Fox Hardware downtown,
yep.
The Fox Brothers.
Know it well.
And, again, it was just kind of a menial job. It was I ran a department and then kind of learned all those hardware skills, sales, merchandising, purchasing. I had to purchase stuff for my own department. And I gradually started learning many of the departments around the store. I mean, in my career as working in hardware, I worked for 12 years and I ran various departments, plumbing, electrical, et cetera. So eventually got to a point where I was working for a company. They bought out another store. There was a locksmith position open in that store because the locksmith was leaving. And I had enough of a background of running various departments that they asked me if I could take over running this locksmith department. I had a little bit of knowledge about locksmithing, but it wasn't something that I was, an expert at. And I said, yeah, I took the challenge. And suddenly, I'm the locksmith. I had to take some training. A lot of it I paid for out of my own pocket. I went to, classes up in Reno and places like that. I paid to go there. And I just gradually got into that industry. And again, always in mind, working for somebody else. Right. I never wanted to work for myself. That was never my goal. I was always to work for someone else.
So what ended up, you are the accidental entrepreneur. What happened that made you go from somebody who was perfectly happy, in fact, really preferred to work for somebody else to somebody who's not working for somebody else, working for himself now?
Yeah. Well, what happened, I worked at a locksmith shop downtown, and then I worked for an alarm company just trying to get more of the trade. And then I finally got my dream job, which was I was working as a locksmith for the Unified School District. It was a union job. It had, benefits, and I was going to have, retirement benefits and all this other stuff. And it was like, yay, I'm finally a member of the union, and I can be here for, 25 years and retire and look just the American dream of looking of being able to have a career and have a pension at the end of the career. And that was, it was such a, it was like, I finally won the lottery or something, And I worked for the school district for close to 4 years and I was laid off. And that was in 2008 during the whole, whole crisis. In fact, the backdrop to my being laid off was the bailouts and all that. I wanted to try to get some skills some more skills for my trade, just to, you know, put me in a better market. So I actually flew back to Kentucky to take some special classes. I was laid off. I had a little bit of money that I could afford to do that. I figured this was the opportune time to do that. And so as I'm going back to Kentucky, the backdrop was all of this chaos with the, you know, the market falling apart and the banks being bailed out, yada, yada, yada.
You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. My guest is Brian Jones. He's one of the guys who, and there are, of course, women too, who responded to my request on this very show. If anybody had an interesting career story they wanted to tell, to email me. And Brian was one of the people I said, yeah, come on in. And this is a guy who worked a long time, as you can tell, from somebody that had been in a million foster homes and did a lot of menial work and eventually worked in hardware, construction hardware, and finally had his dream job working for a school district with union and benefits and the whole thing. And then he gets laid off 2008. And we're going to talk about what's going to happen next to Brian now. So what happened next?
Well, I came back to San Francisco. I looked for work. I think about 5 or 6 months into it, I was collecting unemployment, applying for jobs. Nothing happened. And I kind of panicked and I realized, I've got to do something. Nobody's hiring me. I'm getting older. And so I decided to try to open up my own business. It was, it was something that I didn't plan on doing. It was never any dream of mine.
How'd you do it? Walk me through the steps. What happened?
Well, the first thing that I did was I made a lot of mistakes. One of the first things that I did was I opened up a shop over on Geary Street. It turned out that didn't work out. I had it for 2 years.
Costs are so enormous.
Yeah.
One of the biggest mistakes you can make is opening up a storefront. The costs are enormous. The meter never stops running.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
These days, working out of your apartment, out of your home, out of your car, out of your truck, out of anything other than a storefront is usually a smart way to go. You agree with that?
Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
Continue.
Yeah. Yeah. Eventually I had to, regroup. But I got a few, basic customers, basic clients starting out. And now I'm pretty much a mobile locksmith. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There is a reason why I opened up the shop, and that's because there's a lot of scam artists in the locksmithing industry, and they pull these things, like they'll say that they'll do something for $15. And then they get out there and they charge $300 and the person is kind of trapped and so on and so forth. And mm-hmm. So I really thought having a physical location would give me the legitimacy and the trust that I was, hoping for. I spent tons and tons of money on advertising and so on that didn't pay off.
No,
and
right.
It was just but it's all a learning curve. And,
right.
And in the end, I feel, even the mistakes that I made, I feel good about.
What's worked for you? And I would love that you said the mistakes, because that really will help all of our listeners that, as they're thinking about starting a business. But what did work?
I guess the same old hackneyed kind of stuff, perseverance and customer service and et cetera. I have really good Yelp reviews and that, those kinds of things help. That's how I start getting a reputation and word
right.
of mouth. I get a lot of callbacks and customers referring me from other customers and stuff. And that's what's really kind of helped me, become more successful.
You wrote some things in the email when you wrote to me first that I want to read little quotes from and then
uh-huh.
you can comment on it. You wrote, "My customers come over to my house. I make them a few keys and they give me a few bucks, and both parties are better off for the transaction. There's something very refreshing for me about these sorts of exchanges, and I feel like they have benefits more immense than just exchanging products for cash." How do you mean?
Well, again, it kind of goes back to my past. Growing up in foster care and so on. I had a lot of, I have a lot of questions about you know, myself, you know, what my place is in the world. You know, not having family and stuff like that leaves me, you know, kind of floundering, trying to figure out who I am. And what I've discovered through running my own business is that it is a real process of self-discovery. There's things that I find out about myself that I would have never imagined. I mean, you know, I have a tendency towards depression and stuff like that, and actually running my own business has empowered me in such a way that that is starting to really dissipate in ways that I never expected. It's really interesting to me.
Yeah, I want to understand that better. You actually wrote in your letter, you wrote, quote, "I intuitively feel that the psychological rewards of running my own business are more useful to me personally than anything I've ever tried in the past, including medication and therapy." Mm-hmm. How has running your own business made you less depressed, more psychologically healthy?
I guess it's because I have to, you're doing a service for a customer, and of course, you know, there's an exchange of money, you know, but it's more than that. There's all the, the creativity that goes in and trying to get customers and solve problems and things like that that are very useful. But I don't know. It's kind of an optimism that I have about, about interacting with people that I just think that, that owning my own business has helped me foster that I didn't really experience before when I worked for other people or you know, when I tried other things.
Here's what I would guess is at play, and you tell me if this is this is right or not. When you're in therapy and you're thinking about your problems, it's all ruminating. There's no mm-hmm. real, you can't think your way out of the problem. Where if you're running a business, you got too much else to think about. You're focusing on other people and mm-hmm. their needs and the business.
Exactly.
So you don't have time to be depressed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also because you have control over your life. Instead of being a slave to the man who mm-hmm. can lay you off at any point, you know, your destiny is in your control. And when people are in their control of their lives, they feel less depressed. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. You said that this is something else you wrote in your email to me. Quote, "People who have never run their own business are always telling you how you should market yourself, etc. I look at them and I see the arrogance of my pre-small business self in their demeanor, and it makes me cringe. What don't people understand about running a small business?"
There are just a lot of assumptions. People would come up to me all the time and give me advice about, you know, I should have a sign hanging from my building. Like I had never thought of that, you know. You do the best you can with the resources that you have. And, and I would put, all the signage and that I could to try to get people to come in, you know, within my budget and so on. And, I don't know. It was just, I would get advice from people that was always just, you know, like, gee, duh, you know, of course. I mean, I've certainly thought of that before myself, you know, but
We've kind of presented it like, you know, everything is really, you know, it's really wonderful being your own boss, but I always love balance. And so something else that you said is that you said you had to learn how to eat crap. So you didn't use the word crap, you used another word, but I'm not allowed to use that word here on the radio for some crazy, stupid reason of the FCC, but I digress. You said that you had to learn how to eat crap sandwiches to ensure you get paid and to get jobs. Explain that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to put up with a lot of crap.
Give me one example of crap you recently faced with a customer or a prospective customer.
Oh, well, it's like, you know, the neighborhood that I was at, there was a whole, mentality that everybody was, you know, supposedly supportive of their small businesses. And so, there was a big thing about a pet store moving in, and the supervisor of the district tried to prevent this pet store from moving in because it was going to affect small businesses. In fact, it was affecting other small businesses that were in that industry. But meanwhile, businesses like mine were being affected by these big buildings sitting empty in the neighborhood. And a lot of the people in the neighborhood would say that they support their small businesses and they love small businesses, et cetera, but then when they would ask me to come out and do something for them, they're locked out of their house or something like that, they would say, oh, can I get a discount since I live in the neighborhood, and so on and so forth. And, you know, and I always felt like, you know, if you support your small businesses, you don't go to, you know, Safeway and ask for discounts or something like that. But, you know, it's a way of kind of, you know, they know that they can ask for discounts for, you know, so I would get a little upset about that. But
you ever feel like, you know, do people either overtly or you get the sense that, you know, there is the big specter of, say, Home Depot, where you can get, I was talking to you off the air about the combination, the front door entry lock that I bought, you know, at Home Depot at a really good price. And it was, you know, it was designed to be self-installed. Do you feel the pressure of competition against the big box stores or not? Or is it a different
thing? You know, it's interesting that you mention that because, you know, there's this myth that the big box stores are really bad for small businesses. And I really, you know, that's a bone of contention for me. As somebody who comes from hardware stores, from that background, I really feel that you know, big box stores help keep other businesses from being predatory to even smaller businesses. So, like, for instance, you know, Ace hardware stores that are scattered all over the city, you know, some of them are owned by, you know, 5-6 stores are owned by one company, by one group. And those 5 or 6 stores cumulatively have more of an impact on a business like mine than a Home Depot would.
Well,
Home Depot keeps them from being predatory. And if there isn't a place like a Home Depot around, then they wind up being...
What's predatory mean?
I don't know. In other words, businesses like locksmiths, I can't... the key business is taken over by the hardware stores, and they tend to cherry pick, the bread and butter items that, you know, businesses like mine need to survive. I mean, I've talked with other people in other industries, like knife sharpeners, people that had small appliances, would sell small appliances, and they all say that those stores have more of an impact on their business than, say, like a Home Depot, for instance.
Anyway, I think that may be a little off topic. So let's move to you wrote that, this is another thing in your email, but let's let our listeners know. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. My guest is Brian Jones. He he's a KALW listener who responded to my request for people who felt they might have a story, career story that might be interesting, maybe even offer lessons for all of us, to email me. He did, and he's a guy who started out living in a bunch of foster homes, was homeless, worked in hardware stores, construction in hardware stores, and eventually got laid off. He had a school district job as a locksmith, but got laid off in 2008. And we're hearing about his successes and travails in running his own business. You wrote, quote, "Before I was self-employed, I used to be very resentful of people that I thought were undeserving of their wealth." Tell me about that, and it implies that you've changed.
Well, I mean, and don't get me wrong, I wouldn't say that I'm a success by any means. I feel like I'm a success from my background, from, you know, having come out of foster care and the expectations that, you know, that people try to lay on me about where I would wind up. I mean, it was not very pretty. I mean, I pretty much had dismal expectations about my life to begin with.
Right.
Having said that, I do feel, especially the last couple of years with all of the work, I mean, you know, my days are 14, 15 hours. Mm. You go out and you do jobs and then I go out and I do jobs and then I have to, you know, come back and do quotes and paperwork and I have to worry about, you know, are the people going to pay me, et cetera, you know, all these things that happen. And it's given me a different perspective about, you know, about what it takes to be successful and the hard work that goes into it, and how somebody might feel you know, that other people want to take that wealth away when they've worked so hard in order to get it in the first place. I mean, and it was something that I never realized. I never realized how hard it is to, you know, run your own business and all the things you have to do.
And the risk. You know, you have a union job. The paycheck is coming in. You have an infrastructure to support you. You've got IT. You've got everything taken care of. You just show up and you work from 9 to 5 or whatever it is and you're done. You run your own business. You're working, you know, 70 hours a week.
You have to
do everything.
Yeah.
And take a risk that you can go broke like so many other businesses. In some ways, it's fairly heroic in my mind, the ethical small business guy. Again, I like to balance. We've talked about the difficulty. But off the air, you told me that right now, lest our listeners think all you're doing is making keys, you've just bid on a $30,000 job. Tell us about that.
Oh, well, yeah, that was a job. I haven't gotten the job, but it's, you know, it's something where and it's rare. I mean, I certainly don't get those kinds of things often, but I've just been asked to bid on a bunch of hardware for a school. And again, I don't know if I can handle. It depends on if my suppliers will extend the credit and so on and so forth. And, you hope for stuff like that, but you have to be able to, you know, have the resources to follow through on it.
Sometimes
too.
It takes money to make money.
Yeah, exactly.
Brian, I got to tell you, just as a human being, you know, I liked your letter, but I like you more as a human being.
Oh, thank you.
I'm really, really rooting for you. I sure hope you get it. I really do.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
And the last question before I let you go, something else you wrote in your, probably at the very end, you wrote in your email to me, you wrote, quote, "I am 24/7 now, and I'm resigned to the possibility that I will work for the rest of my life. And it's not a depressing feeling."
It isn't.
Tell me about
that. Yeah. I mean, you know, I feel like I'm very nervous, you know, when I'm here and I'm not, you know, expressing myself very well.
You're doing great, I swear.
But the one thing that I do want to, you know, to anybody out in the audience, I mean, I just want to say, you know, when I was 19, I was so depressed that I actually took a trek to the Golden Gate Bridge. I was thinking about jumping off, you know. And I just want to say that if there's anybody out there that just, you know, feels really desperate and in their life, to just not give up. And this is another example. It's like, yeah, you know, I got laid off from my school district job and it seemed like it was going to be a really good, you know, job that I really wanted and it didn't work out. And now, you know, like I say, things don't, you know, it looks like I'm going to be working for the rest of my life and so on, but just don't, I just want to tell people, please just don't give up. You know, that's really my whole goal when I came here is I really just wanted to just reach out to anybody that may have come from, you know, from a background like mine and just say, please don't give up. You know, that's really the message that I want to give to people. Don't give up on anything. Don't give up on yourselves.
And like you also, would you tell us, give just a brief little pitch about the kind of services you provide and how listeners could contact you if they're interested in your locksmithing services?
Yeah. I provide a 24-hour emergency locksmith service in case you're ever locked out of your house or car. You've lost keys or anything like that. But I also install new locks and we were talking about electronic locks, card access, things like that for businesses. I do, you know, businesses.
And how can they contact you?
And they can contact me at, do I give my phone number?
Sure, why not?
415-751-2087.
I'm going to say it again more slowly. 415-751-2087. I want to give people a chance to write it down.
Yeah, and it's rhinoceros security. You know, they're an ancient animal. They're very family-oriented. They're also, you know, they're hunted down for their bones, for their horns and so on. So there's a lot of superstitions about them. And I picked that animal, you know, because I think it's a very noble animal. So that's what my business is, you know.
So feel free to go and Yelp him, and it's Rhinoceros Security, 415-751-2087. It's a one-man operation. You're not going to get somebody who works for the boss. You're going to get the man. The man is Brian Jones. And thanks very much for being my guest on Work with Marty Nemkow.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're most welcome. And now, my dear listeners, it's you're welcome to stay around. You want to see? You're welcome to hang around, Brian. But now, my dear listeners, it is my privilege. I love this part. I love every part of doing the show. It really is a privilege. But it is now my privilege to try to help you. So whether you have been in 19 foster homes or you've been born with a silver spoon, but you're struggling at any stage of your career, starting out at the end, any kind of problem, practical or psychological, still don't know what you want to be when you grow up, even though you're 60, you're running your own business and it's, you know, you want to take it to the next level, whether it's to go from bare survival to success or you want to decide whether to close it down. Any kind of work-related problem, I usually can at least give you a baby step forward, if not sometimes even a giant step. Certainly the price is right, zero, zippo, nada, as I like to say. So the phone number for a three-minute career makeover or workover, whatever you want to call it, here at Work with Marty Nemkow on KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for the calls to come in, and by the way, this is a good time to call before the lines get filled so you won't have to wait on hold for a zillion hours, and that way you know you definitely get on. So, we've got calls coming in already, so let's go right to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemkow. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, Marty. Thanks for having Brian Jones on.
Wasn't he great?
And, yeah, he's absolutely terrific. And
I
hope you have more interviews like this.
Yeah, I'm going to do it next week, by the way. I've got a woman coming on who's got no degree. Her big thing is she's had 10 professional careers, no degrees. She's going to tell all about that next week. It should be a good show, too.
That's great. I've also had no degrees, but I've made $2,000 a day because of my service, and I tell you, it can really work.
Wow, tell me.
And I come from a hard background, too. So we are out there, and I want to say for everyone who runs a small business, don't spend a lot of money on advertising. Mm-hmm. I know, Brian Jones, you learned it the hard way, but there's a book called Marketing Without Advertising.
It has
a lot of anecdotes about real small business people. And I discovered that book only after I did just all the basic things in that book I did that worked for me. I was so flooded with work that people told me I was sitting on a gold mine, I should hire people, but that's not what I want to do. I want to package this up and sell how to do it. So you think about, too, you know, when you can't work anymore, what you're going to do. How long can you keep making keys or doing your small service all by yourself? You have to plan ahead, and that's why I'm going to be taking my business online and packaging how to do this, so that other people can make money on it.
Well, why don't you tell us, you make $2,000 a day. How do you make $2,000 a day?
Well, I developed a way to make green cleaning easy and cheap and convenient. And I was approached by nonprofits who wanted me to teach low-income single mothers how to start a business doing this.
But how does that make $2,000 a day?
Well, actually, I was charging $1,000 a day, but learned that it could make $2,000 a day. And so, because I also knew somebody who single-handedly learned how to kick drug landlords out of her neighborhood, and she packaged it up, and she went around the nation giving trainings for $2,000 a day.
I see. So you did the training thing. I see.
City agencies, government agencies,
yep.
Nonprofits. And
yep.
She told me the business model.
Right.
And so if you have something that can really help people a lot, that's what you do. And there's someone who wrote a book called Build Your Dream House for a Song, and he learned how to build his own house, and he gives City College classes. And he makes more money selling that book than the classes themselves, and he makes good money at it.
Let me ask you a question.
On his website, he explains how to do it yourself, how to give classes at City College and make that you know, make good money.
Well, let me, before, you know, I don't want too much, I know a lot of authors who teach classes and do workshops or whatever and have a heck of a time selling. I'm always a little nervous about that because I know for everyone who's making big money selling their books, as somebody who has written 6 books and worked really hard to try to get them in people's hands.
Well,
not so. Let me finish. What I want to ask you is about this model of selling your training services to government. It's a great idea. As you know, even in tough times, the reality is the government has the most money and they will pay thousands of dollars for training. That's absolutely right. But what I have heard, and I wanted to hear your answer to this, is that normally you have to be affiliated with another either nonprofit or government agency. They won't hire you as an individual. Did you affiliate yourself with a nonprofit or a government agency to get that $2,000 a day, or did you do it on your own?
Well, to clarify, I was making 1,000 a day.
Or 1,000 a day, even.
1,000.
Sure, even 1,000 a day.
Okay. Well, here's how I did it. I was just working independently, and I was approached by this nonprofit who in turn got funding from the EPA and other government agencies who sponsored it, and that's how it happened. And then if I wanted to, I could approach agencies myself,
right,
or nonprofit agencies. In fact, nonprofits were starting to kind of fight among themselves who was gonna you know, get the training, and they also wanted me to not teach anyone else or not to publish anything. I learned the hard way how there's a business model to this, and I just wanted the low income people to, they can get this training for, you know, for low cost or for free.
We've got a lot of lines lighted up, so I want to thank you for the call. You know, there are great lessons here, by the way. Not only is a great model, if you're one of these people who likes to get projects and, whether it be training or something else, the government continues to be the best customer. You can't do it on your own. So, yeah, you got to get a nonprofit to affiliate. But, of course, it's, you know, it really is. It's so simple in a sense. There's always certain hot buttons that the government always cares about. Green, in her case, it was green. Low income. You pick two things that the government cares about, whether it be green, low income, minorities. Those are the kind of things. You pick two of them, you combine them together with your expertise, you write a proposal that addresses those two things, special ed kids, basically anything that's a society have-nots, that addresses the needs of the society's have-nots, is what government is interested in. So you combine your expertise with some subpopulation that the government is interested in. You hook yourself up with a nonprofit and say, I would like to write a proposal to the government to fund me to do trainings, to provide services, to provide mediation, counseling, whatever it is, for the target population. There's no guarantees, but that is an excellent business model. And by the way, I did not ignore her. She mentioned this book, Marketing Without Advertising. That looks pretty cool. I am going to, when I go home today, I am going to look that up. And if it looks good, I'm going to have the author on the show, because that sounds like in this era where it is so hard to get a job, to land a good job. And nobody's got advertising budgets, nor should they. It's usually when you spend money on advertising in your small business, it benefits the publication you're advertising in much more than it benefits you. So I love the idea of marketing without advertising. But let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty. Let me give out the phone number, though. If you would like a 3-minute career makeover, you could use some career help or self-employment help. I will try to provide it, and it won't cost you a dime. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco on KALW 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now back to the phones. How can I help you?
Hi, is that me?
It is.
I'd like to say about Brian Jones that it's a tremendous story,
right,
of character and survival.
Right.
And it should be written. He should write a book about it also.
It's a lovely story.
Because it informs people. And also it conveys feeling, tremendous empathy.
I don't know if he's a writer, but I'm going to go and write a blog post about it in the next day or two.
He should write a book.
Not everybody's a writer.
He has something to say.
Right. I'm going to write about it. I'm going to tell his story.
Maybe with someone, but it ought to be by him.
Yeah.
And you should talk to Barbara, because that's something that you help lots of people, Marty, but empathy is something that you need to learn.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Where was I not empathic?
It's something I've listened to you for years, and that's what you have much less of than Barbara.
Okay, well, I appreciate your perspective.
That's the truth.
Well, it may well be the truth.
Perhaps.
Yeah, it may well be the truth. You know, sometimes it really is true, though. I think there is a time for empathy when a person deserves their support, but sometimes it leads to complacency. And I like to think that you universally bestow empathy and support for people. Ultimately, you disempower them. There's a time to support and there's a time to challenge. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Is it me?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I know what that last caller means, but I think you have a way of expressing your empathy in a kind of a, well, like you say, challenging. It's a kind of a spiritual warfare, actually. And I think ultimately it relates back to your experience with your father, in which he had no time for the, you know, he wasn't going to give the Nazis any more of his time. And I think this has to do with a quest for meaning. And I really appreciate your sort of like forgetting yourself and becoming the servant of all. And like that last caller, yeah, I think that he finally found that. And I think that's an aspect of something in us that is has divine source, is a source of the divine. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay,
thank you.
Thanks
God
for the
bless
call.
You.
Let's go. I'll give out the phone number again. If you could use some career help, I'm not interested in psychoanalysis particularly. The phone number, if you would like some career help, I'd be happy to provide it. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, whether you're 16 or 76, self-employed, employed by others, or unemployed, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I came across an article that I found interesting. You know, after doing this show for so long, I'm always looking for something fresh. I don't want the same old crap. So this one was came from an odd place, a website called businessinsurance.org, and it was called The 9 Most Depressing Professions. And it was interesting, and so I wanted to share some of it with you. Number one on the list of 9 most depressing professions, would you believe, and it's not surprising when you think about it, is comedians. I mean, it may be hard to believe that someone who's making their money by making the world laugh could be depressed. But it is not only a lot of hard work, really, to become a good comedian. You get rejected so much. The paychecks are usually crap. And that's why, this may surprise you, comedians are almost twice as likely to commit suicide than a typical American. Also, as you know, many comedians have very tumultuous personal lives. They struggle with drugs and alcohol. Some comedian suicides, these are more recent ones. We, of course, know if you're older, you know, like Jim Belushi types. But was it John Belushi? John Belushi. But there's also more recently a Saturday Night Live cast member, Charles Rocket, committed suicide. And a guy who's on HBO all the time, he's always on regulars, Richard Jenny. So that's an example of a perhaps surprising depression, a depressing job. I consider those all performance work the best hobby and the worst career, because it's easy to do it if you're not expecting to get paid. Go to open nights, open mic nights, and, you know, perform in community theater or do a one-woman show like my dear client Jeffrey Givens is going to be doing for a KELW listener. Sold out as a KELW thank you event on April 22nd. Oh, by the way, I have created a special I'm going to let during the KELW pledge drive in May. I'm going to be, because there was unprecedented response to Jeffrey Givens' appearance on the show where she sang and told her career story. I'm going to be she's going to be doing her one-woman show, and I'm going to I'm going to make that premium seating for that the thank you present for the KLW pledged for people who pledged to KLW. So when we get to that, we'll let you know. It's about a month or so, a little more than a month away, but I just want to give you a heads up about that. Any case, one more career, 9 most depressing professions. Number 2 is waiters. In fact, over 10% of people in the food service industry suffered with major depression in this year. Study according to the Mental Health Services Administration, 15% of women had depression that year, twice the national average. Jobs that wait staff are often thankless, low pay, little room for advancement, varying shifts. You have to work nights, and afterwards you're so exhausted you hang out with your fellow restaurant people and get drunk or stoned. It can be exhausting and not great, so that's a depressing career. I got more, but I'd rather go to the phones and try to help you. The Oh, how funny. My board operator, Joanne Marr, just let me know that that book, Marketing Without Advertising, is written by a former KALW host, Michael Phillips, and published by the very wonderful NOLO Press. I will very likely have him on my show. That sounds really good. So let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hey, hi. So I'm a musician, and I guess my question is, I guess I'm having a hard time making a distinction as to whether this is just something I do or this is something that I want to make a career out of.
Right. Well, what has happened, the reality is, do not trust your teachers, because teachers are paid to be positive. Have you sent your demos or, you know, part of your website that's got your MP3 files on it, or have you sent it to 20 the most likely people with the power to hire you?
No.
That's the test. If you create an MP3 of your best stuff, right?
Yeah.
Contrasting styles, two or three different, MP3 files, two, you know, maybe even reduced down to like 1 minute of each clip, three different things, send it with a nice little cover note to, I mean, what's your genre of music? I'll give you an example of the kind of places you'd be sending it. What kind of genre of music do you play?
I do classical trumpet, but I'm also kind of working on some songwriting and things like that. So I guess this is mainly about the kind of songwriting aspect.
Okay. So what? And do you sing, or do you just play them, or do you have somebody singing? What's the deal?
I sing and I play guitar.
Okay. So right. So I would take the best songs, you know, and you can, you know, for me, people are always so busy who are employers. I would take the best one chorus, a verse and chorus of, you know, 16 bars of. Each of those three best of that are in contrasting style that you're most proud of, with the lyrics you're most proud of, make that on one MP3 file. I would send it, I would guess, in songwriting, I would send it to maybe major performers who might want to be willing to perform your stuff, and therefore you get a royalty of it, or labels, or if you want to do it live, I might send it to, you know, live clubs that have music that have live performances in that genre. If 20 out of 20 blow you off, and it is worth making a follow-up phone call because everybody's busy, but yeah. What I would do is I would start with a phone call. I'd call them and say, I'm going to be sending you this MP3 file. I really think I'm right for your venue or your label or whatever, and I hope you'll give it a listen. And then you send it to them immediately. And if 20 out of 20 blow you off, and if you really want to cover your bases, you might call them one more time to follow up. If 20 out of 20 blow you off, or they say, yeah, why don't you come to open mic night, or we'll pay you $5, or, you know, something little, that gives you the picture. You know, yes, there are stories of people who persisted for 10 years and 20 years, and after year number 23, suddenly they became an overnight success. But statistically, the odds of that happening are very small. Those are the ones who write books. Those are the ones who get on Oprah. But for every one of those who get on Oprah, there's 10 million who are not. So the most cost-effective way, at the risk of not being empathic, is to take 20, do a real good job of checking out, you know, what they think of what those 20 think, and then make your judgment. And don't feel bad if it needs to be a hobby. It's great. Being a musician is a great hobby, a great outlet. But if you can make it as a career, why not? Or maybe this is a sideline. But that's the fastest, easy way to get the no BS truth about your performance.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much.
Now, I got one other thought. You have your guitar in your hand by any chance? Or right?
No, I'm in the car.
Nah, okay. I'll tell you what. If you feel like it, run to the car. You want to do 8 bars for me, and I will give you a non-empathic, I will give you a non-honest, no BS. I'm a professional musician. I played over 2,000 professional gigs in New York. I'm the accompanist for Jeffrey Gibbons in her one-woman show. I will give you my no BS reaction to what you've done. Not that any one person has a monopoly on taste. So you should feel free to call in. We got about 10 minutes left in the show, all right?
All right, thanks. I'll try to call back.
Okay, take care. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air.
Hello?
Hi.
Am I on the air?
It is. You are. How can I help?
Okay. I just wanted to make a real quick comment. I'm not going to psychoanalyze you, but I think I love your invaluable, frank observations. And I think anybody going into the business or self-employment today, because the old days you just got a job, right? I'm 72 years old.
You sound so young. You're 72, and that's not trying to be empathic. You're 72? Wow.
I'm 72, but, you know, yeah, and I do contract work as a systems engineer. But you ask the important questions. I've never listened to your show before. Mm. You ask the important questions, and I think that the really important thing for all people out there now, because there's so many of them going into their own jobs because there aren't a lot of jobs in industries.
Right.
It's like the IT business. People stopped studying for it because they said there was going to be a downturn, and now they can't find enough people to fill the jobs or have the experience. So your information, the hard questions, and just keep moving forward and be persistent and learn whether it's marketing without advertising or whatever the skills you need. But you have to ask yourself, starting a business or going to work for yourself, the hard questions. And you ask those, and I'm really impressed.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I really do think that ultimately, as you know, I don't remember who originally said it, but the truth shall set you free. The one thing, you know, at this stage, I only do this because I care to make a difference. And for me, the only thing that counts is this likely? Is this my best shot at helping the client? I don't care if I'm liked. I don't care if I'm not liked.
I think a lot of people like you, I can tell. You are someone that the information is clear, precise. You're asking the hard questions. It's not like this fellow that you just sent out to the car to send that to you and a no BS reaction to it. That's the way you have to be to yourself in order to go into and work for yourself. You've really got to be able to have a little bit of hard skin, to be able to go through the rejections or to keep going and to know when you can't do it, to be able to say, look, this isn't for me. I'm going to go out and get a job in an office.
Well, I appreciate the call very much. Let me just try to help some other people. It was very nice to get that positive call. I'm glad you're a listener. Hope you'll keep listening. Okay, before I go to the phones, let me tell you another one of these. This article that I found, the 9 most depressing professions, number 3rd on the list. Well, I'll skip artists because we got that point already. Veterinarians. This really surprised me because I would think I would love to be a veterinarian, but. What the article says is vets, those smiling people who take your fur children, that's a nice term, my little doggy Einstein is my little baby, my child indeed, those smiling people who take your fur children into their arms and fix them up might actually not be so happy. Pet doctors are 4 times as likely as the average person to commit suicide. Vets have high competition early in their careers and work long hours, and research suggests that they... Also, they have a higher comfort level with euthanasia because they do it so much for animals and they do it to themselves. They also tend to work alone and they eventually suffer compassion fatigue. You know, when you're dealing every day with a sick animal, and, you know, my dog, the saddest moment in my life, at the risk of sounding shallow, was when I had to put my last dog down. I was pounding the walls of the vet's office. I loved my doggie so much. It's surprising, but I guess vets... it could be a depressing profession. One more, teachers. Even though teaching kids can be a great joy, a lot of teachers find the job very stressful and end up depressed as a result. Again, this is from this article, The 9 Most Depressing Professions from, of all places, businessinsurance.org. Dealing with behavior problems, trying to increase test scores against the odds, handling requests from principals and parents can all lead to teacher burnout and depression. Indeed, about 1/3 of teachers leave the profession within the first few years. A high number leaves the field altogether, often a combination of the stress, low pay, and amount of work that they often find themselves taking home to complete. So it's not really that surprising that teaching, while in theory could be one of the most uplifting of professions, can be, not always certainly, can be among the most depressing. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, terrific. Marty, you're a terrific person. I've listened to you for years. I think you get straight to the point and you're most helpful.
Thank you.
I have an interesting story. I'm 71 years old. I apologize for my hoarse voice.
No, it's fine.
But in any event, I too am in a profession that has, for years, I've had the highest suicide rate. In fact, after my first 15 years in this profession, I fled my profession. I was so upset with a lot of things in my life.
What was the profession?
I'll get there. I don't want to try to influence people that way.
Okay.
In any event, I went back to school, got some advanced degrees. I do have a doctorate degree. Had some advanced degrees, went into the securities business and was even more dissatisfied. Mm-hmm. One thing led to another, and I found my way back into the primary profession simply because in my late 50s, I was out of money. I had to pay the rent.
Mm-hmm.
So to make a long story short, when I returned to my profession, the opportunities to succeed were far more limited with the geographics, with the demand supply. There were more people in my profession where I originally set up than donut shops. And I realized if I did the same thing again, I would not only have the same result, but would be even worse.
Mm-hmm.
So an idea came to me. In the meantime, I'd been employed in my profession, paying the rent, and I have, I think, some very well-developed social skills. One day I was going to lunch, I was walking down a hill in Oakland, and I said, you know, this guy's going to fire me. Oh, my God. Well, no problem. I'll get another job. It's not going to be that difficult. At that time, it wasn't. And I realized I didn't have a problem then, but I do have. But I did have a problem. My problem would be 10 years later when I still needed to work. I remember my mother's skin, what it was like when she was in her 60s. And I knew when I got in my 60s, it would be a lot more difficult to get a job than it was then.
Yep.
Because people are going to, you know, gauge me by my age. To make a long story short, all of a sudden, the idea came to me. And it turned my life around. Just this one idea, Marty. And that was, if I'm going to go back into this profession and be in business for myself again, I have to do what other people in this profession don't want to do. And there's two or three things in this profession that most people in this profession don't want to do. Fortunately, one of them I had an acclimation to, and it was something I could get behind. And with once I started my profession, within months, I had no startup costs. I took over a lease for another person who was running away. So with no startup costs and within months, I was making six figures. And there's people in this profession today that can't get out fast enough because they're not making money.
Okay, you got it. We're out of time for the whole show, so you got to tell us what the profession is.
Dentistry.
Yeah, I knew it. You know, I knew that's where you were. It is a very suicide-prone profession because not only because of the pain you induce, but because of the back problems. You're leaning over patients all day. A high percentage of dentists have back problems and carpal tunnel problems. Is that right?
Yes, that's not my thing. But the key thing I want to get out, Marty, is opportunities exist when you do things that other people don't want to do.
What do you do? What do you do as a dentist? We are really out of time, so just give me the 15-second answer. What do you do as a dentist? Root canals.
Root canals.
Okay. Yeah. Specialization is critical.
Root canals for indigent people because
I see.
Specialists don't want to touch it.
Interesting. Well, that's really interesting. Yes, we are in an era of specialization, and yes, doing whether it's a specialty or willingness to work Christmas and New Year's and nights and weekends can be the way to get yourself established. I want to thank you very much for the call. I do appreciate it very much.
Have a nice day.
You too. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I wish you all no root canals. My thanks to my board operator, Joanne Marr. My thanks also to Brian Jones, great guest, really inspiration to all of us. The guy who had a million, was in a million foster homes and now is running at least a somewhat successful locksmith business. Great, great stories. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute career makeovers on callers. And Linda Seabright, one person, 10 professional careers, no degree. She's a KAW listener who's going to come in, tell us the lessons she's learned from her career travails. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.